The idea of it being wrecked by a storm was an utter violation. She shook her head and gripped the wheel tighter, suddenly aware of how angry she was. Her love of the house, even of her father, could never be simple. They had both betrayed her. But now there was a new monster out there. She clenched her jaw, trying to fight the tears that welled up in her eyes.
Dad, what did you do?
As soon as they were out of the town center, Charlie sped up. Clay would be tied up dealing with the newest victim for a while, but eventually he would think to come to her father's house as well. She could only hope that she'd connected the dots first.
You're on the same side.
Charlie put a hand to her head and rubbed her temple. The impulse to guard her father's reputation from what was coming was visceral, but it was also nonsensical. Less than a mile from the house, they passed a construction site. It was set back too far from the road for Charlie to see what it was, though it looked abandoned at the moment.
I did a little work over there when I first got here, John said. Some huge demolition project.
He laughed.
You have some weird stuff out here. You wouldn't know by looking at it.
He studied the countryside for a moment.
Isn't that the truth? Charlie said, not sure if there was something else she was supposed to say.
She was still trying to calm herself. Finally, they came to her driveway. She pulled in with her eyes on the gravel, the house only a dark smudge in her peripheral vision. The last time Charlie had been here, she'd run in and out without pausing to look at anything. All she'd wanted was Theodore, and she had grabbed him and gone. Now she regretted her haste, wishing for some final mental image.
You're not here to say goodbye.
She turned the car off, steeled herself, and looked up. The house was surrounded by trees, and at least three of them had fallen, striking the roof directly. One had landed squarely on the front corner, crushing the walls beneath its weight. Charlie could see through the broken beams and crumbled drywall into the living room. Inside, there was only debris. The front door was intact, though the steps to it were splintered and split. They looked as if they'd give way as soon as they bore weight. Charlie got out of the car and headed toward them.
What are you doing?
John's voice was alarmed. Charlie ignored him. She heard his door slam, and he caught her arm, wrenching her back.
What?
She snapped.
Charlie, look at this place. That house is going to fall over any day now.
It's not going to fall, she said flatly, but she did gaze up again. The house seemed to be listing to the side, though it must have been an illusion. Surely the foundation itself couldn't have sunk.
I'll be out before I get killed, I promise, she said more gently, and he nodded.
Go slow, he said.
They carefully climbed the steps to the porch, staying close to the sides, but the wood was sturdier than it looked. They could have taken three steps to the right and walked through the open wall, but Charlie took out her key and unlocked the door as John waited patiently, letting her go through the unnecessary ritual. Inside, she paused at the foot of the stairs to the second floor. The holes in the ceiling were beaming down shafts of thin sunlight, dimming as the sun began to wane. It made the place feel almost like some sort of shrine. Charlie tore her eyes away from the holes and started upstairs to her bedroom. As with the outdoor steps, she kept to the side, holding on to the banister. The water damage was visible everywhere. There were dark stains and soft spots in the wood. Charlie reached out to touch a place where the paint had bubbled out from the wall, leaving a pocket of air. Suddenly, a cracking sound came from behind her, and she spun around. John grabbed the banister, struggling to hold on as the stair gave way under him. Charlie reached out, but John braced himself unsteadily. He hissed and gritted his teeth.
My foot's stuck, he said, nodding down.
Charlie saw that his foot had gone clear through the wood, and now the jagged edges dug into his ankle.
Okay, hold on, Charlie said. She crouched down until she could reach him on the step below her, though the awkward angle made it hard to maintain her balance. The wood was only rotting in some places, while in others it was still intact. She grabbed the smaller pieces and pulled them cautiously back from John's foot, her hands growing raw with the rough and splintered surface.
I think I've got it, John said finally, flexing his ankle. She looked up and grinned.
And you thought I was going to get myself killed.
John gave her a weak smile.
How about we both make it out alive?
Right. They made their way up the rest of the stairs much more slowly, each of them testing their weight before they took the next step.
Careful, John warned as Charlie reached the top.
We won't be here long, Charlie said.
She was much more aware of the danger now. The house's instability grew more obvious with each step they took. The very foundation seemed to wobble from side to side as they moved. Her old bedroom was on the undamaged side of the house, or the side not struck by trees, at least. Charlie stopped in the doorway, and John came up behind her. The floor was strewn with glass. One window had been broken by something, and the shattered glass had blown into the room. She took a deep breath, and it was then that she saw Stanley. The animatronic unicorn had once run on a track around her bedroom. Now he was lying on his side. Charlie went to him and sat down, pulling his head into her lap and patting his rusty cheek. He looked as if he'd been torn violently from his track. His legs were twisted, his hooves missing chunks. When she looked around the room, she saw the missing pieces, still attached to the grooves in the floor.
Stanley has seen better days, John smiled ruefully.
Yeah, Charlie said absently, as she set the toy's head back on the floor. John, can you turn that wheel?
She pointed to a crank soldered together at the foot of her bed. He complied, crossing the floor agonizingly slowly. Charlie bit back her impatience. He turned the crank and she waited for the littlest closet door to open, but nothing happened. John looked at Charlie expectantly. She stood and went to the wall where the three closets stood, closed and apparently untouched by the weather. Even the paint was bright and immaculate. Charlie hesitated, feeling as if she might be disturbing something that no longer belonged to her, then forced the smallest door open. Ella was there, the doll who had been the same size as Charlie when she was much younger. She, like Stanley, had once run around on a track, and she seemed to still be attached to it. She was entirely undamaged. Her dress was clean, and the tray she held in front of her was firm in her motionless hands. Her wide eyes had been gazing into the darkness since the last time Charlie saw her.
Hi, Ella, Charlie said softly. I don't suppose you can tell me what I'm looking for.
She scanned over the doll quickly and brushed at her dress.
You just want to stay in here from now on?
Charlie studied the tiny frame of the door.
I don't blame you.
She closed the closet door again without saying goodbye.
So, she said, turning back to John. He seemed lost in thought, staring at something in his hand.
What is that? Charlie asked. A photo of you, when you were no bigger than her.
John smiled and gestured toward Ella's door, then handed the picture to Charlie. It looked like a school photo. A short, chubby girl gave a toothy grin for the camera, minus one tooth. Charlie smiled back at her.
I don't remember this.
That doll is a little creepy, standing in the closet, John said. I'm a bit on edge, I won't lie.
Waiting for a tea party, Charlie said acerbically. How sinister.
She started to leave the room, but as her hand touched the door frame, she paused.
Doors.
She stepped back through into her bedroom, and looked for a long moment at each of the rectangular closet doors.
John, she whispered.
What?
John looked up, trying to follow Charlie's gaze.
Doors, Charlie whispered.
She took several long steps back to study the whole wall at once. The scribbles all over her notebooks had been shaped like dozens, hundreds of rectangles. She drew them without thinking, as if they were pushing up through her mind, trying to break out of her subconscious. Now they had.
They're doors, she repeated.
Yes, yes, I see.
John tilted his head curiously.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine. I mean, I'm not sure.
She ran her eyes over the wall of the closets again.
Doors, but not these doors.
Come on, let's go look at the workshop, John said. Maybe we can find something else there.
Right.
She gave a pained smile. She looked back once more at the three closets that sat in silence. John nodded, and they went cautiously back down the stairs, testing each step before they took it. Outside, they stopped by the car. The workshop was invisible from the driveway, hidden behind the house. The backyard had once been surrounded by trees, a small wood that acted as a fence.
"Don't go into the woods, Charlie," she said, then smiled at John. "That's what he always told me, like something out of a fairy tale."
They walked a bit farther, twigs snapping under their feet.
"But the woods were only 10 feet deep," she said, still peering into the trees as though something might leap out.
As a child, these trees had seemed impenetrable, a forest she might be lost in forever if she dared to wander in. She started toward what remained of them, then stopped dead when she saw where some of the fallen trees had landed. Her father's workshop had been crushed. A massive trunk had hit the workshop's roof dead center, and others had come with it on all sides. The wall closest to the house was still standing, but it was bowed beneath the sagging roof. It had been a garage when they moved in, and then it had become her father's world. A place of light and shadow that smelled of hot metal and burnt plastic. Charlie peered down at the rotting wood and broken glass with careful attention, looking for something she might otherwise miss.
"We're definitely not going in there," John said.
But Charlie was already lifting a piece of sheet metal that had once belonged to the roof. She threw it violently to the side, and it hit the ground with a resounding clang. John startled and kept his distance as Charlie continued to throw things.
What are we looking for?
Charlie wrestled a toy from under the debris and threw it carelessly to the ground behind her, continuing to lift sheets of metal and toss them aside.
Charlie, John whispered,
picking up the delicate toy and cradling it.
He must have made this for you.
Charlie ignored him.
There's got to be something else in here.
She fought her way deeper into the workshop, toppling a wooden beam out of her way. Her hand slipped on the wood, and she realized it was wet. Her arm was bleeding. She wiped her hand on her jeans. From the corner of her eye, she saw John set the toy carefully on the ground and follow her in. Amazingly, there were still shelves and tables standing upright, with tools and shreds of fabric where her father had last set them. Charlie glanced at them for a passing moment, then swept her arm across the table nearest her, knocking everything to the ground. She didn't pause to see what had fallen before moving to the shelves. She began picking things off the nearest shelf one item at a time, inspecting them and throwing them to the ground. When the shelf was empty, she grabbed the board itself with both hands, wrenching at it violently, trying to pull it from the wall. When it didn't come loose, she began pounding at it with her fists.
"Stop!"
John ran to her and grabbed her hands, pinning them to her sides.
"There has to be something here!" she screamed.
I'm supposed to be here, but I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to find.
What are you talking about? There's a lot left. Look at this stuff.
He held the toy up to her again.
This isn't about the storm, John. It's not about happy memories or closure or whatever you think I need. This is about monsters. They're out there, and they're killing people. And you and I both know that there is only one place they could have come from. Here.
You don't know that, John began.
Charlie looked at him with a stony rage, stopping him short.
I'm surrounded by monsters and murder and death and spirits.
At the last word, her fury ebbed, and she turned away from John, surveying the workshop. She wasn't sure now what damage the storm had done, and what had been her.
All I can think about is Sammy. I feel him. Right now, I can feel him in this place, but he's cut off. It doesn't even make sense. He died before my father and I moved here. But I know I'm here for a reason. There's something that I'm supposed to find. It's all connected, but I don't know how. Maybe something to do with the doors? I don't know.
Hey, okay. We'll find it together.
John reached out for her. Charlie's strength gave way, and she let him pull her close, pressing her face into his shirt.
I know it's hard to see everything torn apart like this, he said.
Charlie's anger drained away, fading into exhaustion. She rested her head on John's shoulder, wishing she could stay like this just a little longer.
Charlie, John said with alarm, and Charlie came back to attention.
He was looking over her shoulder, in the direction of the house. The entire back face of the house had been torn open, as if someone had taken a massive hammer to it. Inside was only dark.
That's right under your room, isn't it? We could have fallen through the floor, John said.
That should be the living room, Charlie said, wiping her sleeve across her face.
Yeah, but it's not.
John looked at her expectantly.
That's not even a part of the house, she said.
A sudden spark of hope revived inside her. Something was out of place. That meant there was something to find. Charlie approached the chasm, and John didn't try to stop her as she climbed up several large slabs of broken concrete. John stayed a step behind her, close enough to catch her if she slipped. Charlie turned to him before entering.
Thank you, she said.
John nodded.
I've never seen this room before,
Charlie whispered as she crept into the hollow space. The walls were made of dark concrete, and the room was small and windowless, a box jammed into the house and sealed away between the rooms. There were no decorations, and nothing to indicate what was stored here. Just a dirt floor and three large holes, deep and oblong like graves.
Those don't look like storm damage, John said.
They're not.
Charlie went up to the edge of the nearest hole, looking down.
Were you expecting to find these?
These holes were deeper than the ones she'd found at Tracy Horton's house. Perhaps it was the shadowy room, but these looked like real graves. They were a foot or so deeper than the ones she'd found before, and partially filled with loose dirt. John was standing patiently behind her, waiting for her answer.
I've seen them before, she admitted. Behind the house of a dead woman.
What are you talking about?
Charlie sighed.
There was another body. I found her today, in a field. I called Clay, and then I went to her house while he waited for the rest of the cops to show up. There were holes like this in her backyard.
That's what you wouldn't tell me? Another body?
John sounded hurt, but his wounded expression lasted only seconds before it cleared. He started scanning the room again, his eyes intent on the walls and floor.
That and the fact that she looked like me, Charlie thought.
So what do you think the holes are?
He asked finally. Charlie barely heard him. Her gaze had fixed on the blank concrete wall on the far side of the room. It was empty, whitewashed, then left to turn gray with dust and mildew. But something drew her to it. Leaving John alone by the open graves, Charlie walked slowly to it, drawn there by a sense of sudden recognition. It was like she'd just remembered a word that had been on the tip of her tongue for days. She hesitated, holding her hands out flat, less than an inch from the wall, uncertain what was holding her back. She steeled herself and placed her palms against the wall. It was cold. She felt a slight shock of surprise, as though she'd expected to feel warmth from the other side. John was speaking, but to her it was only murmurs in the distance. She turned her head and delicately placed her ear against the surface, closing her eyes. Movement?
Hey!
John's voice broke her focus, waking her as if from a trance.
Over here!
She turned. John was bent over the mound of dirt next to the farthest grave. Charlie started toward him, but he put up a hand to stop her.
No, come around the other way.
She carefully made her way around the perimeter of the little room until she was beside him. At first, she couldn't tell what he was trying to show her. Something was almost visible, veiled in a thin layer of dirt, so that it blended into the ground as if deliberately camouflaged. But eventually, she saw it. Rusted metal, and the glint of a staring, plastic eye. She glanced at John, who just looked back at her. This was her territory now. Carefully, Charlie poked the mostly buried head of the thing with the toe of her sneaker, then yanked her foot back. The thing didn't move.
What the heck is this?
John asked, glancing around the room.
And why is it in here?
I've never seen this before, Charlie said. She knelt, curiosity overtaking her fear, then used her hand to scrape aside some of the dirt, clearing off a little more of the creature's face. Behind her, John drew a sharp breath. Charlie just stared down. The creature had no fur, and its face was smooth. It had a short muzzle and oval ears sticking out from the sides of the head. It had the general appearance of an animal's head, though much larger than the animatronic animals from Freddy's. Charlie couldn't guess what kind of animal it was supposed to be. Running down the center of its face was a long, straight split, exposing wires and a line of metal frame. A thick plastic material was stuck to the face in large patches. Maybe it had been encased in it at some point.
Do you recognize it?
John asked quietly. Charlie shook her head.
No,
she managed to say after a moment. Something's wrong with it. She brushed back more dirt and found it came away easily. The thing had only been partially buried beneath the floor. That, or it had almost escaped. She started digging her hands into the dirt, trying to pry it out of what remained of its grave.
You've got to be kidding me.
John groaned as he knelt to help, getting his hands around any part of it he could. In one concentrated effort, they heaved it upward, managing to pull most of the torso out of the dirt. They let it drop, then fell back on the ground to study it while they caught their breath. Like the face, the body was smoother than the animatronics that Charlie was used to. It had no fur, and no tail or other animal appendages. It was too large for a human being to wear, probably 8 feet tall when standing. Still, Charlie couldn't shake the feeling that she recognized this creature. Foxy. There was something sick about the creature, a weirdness that gripped her at the most basic, primal level and cried, "This is wrong." Charlie closed her eyes for a moment. Her skin felt strange, like something was crawling all over it. "It's just an oversized doll." She took a deep, deliberate breath, opened her eyes, and inched forward to examine the thing. As her hand touched the creature, a wave of nausea hit her, but it lasted only a split second. She continued. She turned the head to the side, its joints resisting. The left side of its skull had been crushed. Charlie could see that the insides were broken, half the wires torn out. Just behind the eye, on the side that had been completely buried, a piece of the casing was missing. She could see a mass of plastic with a tangle of wires running in and out of it. Something had melted one of the circuit boards. Moving slowly down the body, Charlie examined its joints. One arm seemed fine, but on the other, both the shoulder and elbow joints had been bent out of shape. Charlie looked up at John, who was watching her with a worried expression.
Anything familiar?
I don't recognize it. It's not something my dad ever showed me, Charlie said.
Maybe we should put it back in the ground and get out of here. This feels like it was a mistake.
But on the inside, Charlie ignored him. The hardware, the joints, it's older technology. Maybe he made them earlier? I don't know.
How can you tell?
I recognize some of this as my dad's work. She frowned and pointed at the creature's head. But then a lot of it is foreign to me. Someone else may have had a hand in it. I'm not sure if my dad made it or not, but I have a feeling he's the one who buried it.
I can't imagine it was designed to be on stage. It's hideous.
John was noticeably nervous, and now he placed his hand on Charlie's arm.
Let's get out of here. This place gives me the creeps.
Gives me the creeps, Charlie said lightly. Who says that? I'm going to try and get it the rest of the way out. I just want to see. She moved away from John's touch, leaning down to dig again by the creature's buried torso.
Charlie!
John cried, just as a metal shriek rang out. The animatronic's arms lifted, and its chest opened like an iron gate. Its metal pieces slid out of place to reveal a dark, gaping pit where sharp spikes and spring locks were just barely visible. It was a trap waiting to be triggered. Yet, disorientingly, something else about it had transformed at the same time. Its artificial skin took on a luminescence, and its movements were fluid and sure. Its casing suddenly appeared to have skin and fur, though they were blurry, flickering like a trick of the light. Charlie jumped backward, but it was too late. The thing had her in its grip and lifted her high into the air. It was pulling her toward it. She beat against its bent and damaged arm, but the other arm steadily forced her closer to the chest cavity. John stumbled backward for a moment, bending forward with one hand over his mouth, as if struck by a wave of nausea. Charlie struggled to break free, but her strength was no match for the creature. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see John lunging toward the beast. He grabbed its head, wrenching at it, trying to force it sideways. Beneath Charlie, the animatronic began to spasm, a stuttering, uncontrolled movement. The creature's grip came loose and its arms swung around wildly. Charlie struggled to get to her feet, but her legs slid in the dirt. The creature seized her again, and its cold fingers drew her closer. Charlie braced her shoe against the ground, trying to give herself leverage, but she was being pulled down by an overwhelming force. Suddenly, she was face to face with the beast, her shoulder already inside its chest cavity. The thing pressed her closer, then suddenly it jerked and released her. She rolled away and heard the sound of snapping spring locks. The creature convulsed on the ground in front of her, headless. Charlie looked at John. He was holding the thing's head in his hands, his eyes wide with shock. He dropped it and kicked it across the floor.
Are you okay?
John scrambled to her. Charlie nodded, staring at the broken animatronic head. It still seemed alive. Its fur bristled and skin moved, as if there were muscle and sinew underneath.
What the heck just happened?
John raised both hands in surrender. Charlie carefully picked up the massive head and flipped it upside down, peering into it through the base where John had torn it off the neck.
Ugh.
John bent over, his hands on his knees. His face was pale. He stifled a retching sound. Charlie started toward him, surprised.
What's wrong with you? You've seen worse than this.
No, it's not that. I don't know what it is.
He straightened, then stumbled toward the wall, bracing himself.
It's like there's some horrible smell in the air, but without the smell.
Charlie held her finger to her ear, listening. There was a tone in the air, so high-pitched and quiet it was almost imperceptible.
I think something is still on, she said.
She set the giant head on the ground. John had a hand to his ear, listening, but when she looked at him, he shook his head.
I can't hear anything.
Charlie returned to the body of the creature and peered into its gaping chest cavity.
Are you okay?
She asked half-heartedly, not taking her eyes off the robot.
Yeah, I feel better back here.
He heaved and she turned. John's face was strained, and his arm was tight across his stomach.
I think it's passing, he said,
then doubled over, barely getting out the last syllable.
This thing!
Charlie clenched her teeth and jerked her weight back and forth, trying to wrestle something loose from inside the chest cavity.
Charlie, get away from it!
John took a step toward her, then swayed back, as if he were tethered to the wall.
There is something really wrong with that thing.
Now this I've seen before, Charlie said, as she pulled the object out at last. It was a flat disc, about the size of a half-dollar coin. She held it up to her ear.
Wow, that's really high-pitched. I can barely hear it. The sound is why you feel sick.
Charlie wedged her fingernail into a small groove on the side of the object and flipped a thin switch. John took several deep breaths, then stood upright again slowly, testing himself. He looked at Charlie.
It stopped, she said.
Charlie,
John whispered, nodding toward the beast on the ground. Charlie looked, and a shock went through her. The illusion of fur and flesh was gone. It was nothing more than a broken robot with unfinished features. John picked up the head once again, turning it to face them.
That thing, it did something,
John said, nodding toward the device in Charlie's hands.
Turn it back on.
He lifted the creature's head a bit higher and stared into its lifeless, round eyes.
Are you sure that's a good idea?
She was about to say, but curiosity got the better of her. John could handle a little more nausea. She slipped her nail back into the groove and flipped the tiny switch. Before their eyes, the fractured and worn face became fluid and smooth, warping into something lifelike. John dropped the head and jumped backward.
It's alive.
No, it's not, Charlie whispered, flipping the switch off again.
She cradled the strange device in her hands, gazing down at it, mesmerized.
I want to know more about this. We have to get back to the dorm.
She got to her feet. I've seen something like this. When I came back here for Theodore, I grabbed a bunch of stuff and put it in a box to study later. I know I saw something like this. For a long moment, John said nothing. Charlie felt a surge of shame. He was looking at her the way Jessica had, the way he had when he first saw her experiment. The little disc in Charlie's palm felt suddenly like the most vital thing in the world. She closed her hand on it.
Okay, then. John said plainly. Let's go.
His tone was calm, and it caught Charlie off guard. John was being deliberately agreeable. She wasn't sure exactly why, but it was reassuring nonetheless.
Okay.
Charlie smiled. Chapter 7. When they got back to the college, Charlie headed for the dorm.
Hey, slow down.
John struggled to catch up. You have that disc?
Of course.
He patted his pocket. I know I've seen something like this before, she said. I'll show you. She glanced at John as she let him into the room she shared with Jessica, but his face remained impassive. He'd already seen the mess. But John didn't look in the direction of Charlie's desk and the covered faces.
You can clear off the chair, Charlie said as she shoved a stack of books out of the way.
She crawled under the bed and emerged a moment later with a large cardboard box. John was standing beside the chair, looking perplexed.
I said you can clear it off, she said.
He laughed.
Clear it off to where?
Right. The chair had a stack of books on the seat and a stack of t-shirts draped over the back. Charlie grabbed the shirts and threw them onto the bed. She set the box on the bed and settled herself cross-legged behind it, so that John would be able to look through it too.
So what is all of this?
He leaned slowly over the box as Charlie rummaged through it, pulling parts out one by one and setting them in a straight line on the bed.
Stuff from my dad's house, electronics, mechanical parts, things from the animatronics, from his work.
She glanced at him nervously.
I know I said that I just went back for Theodore, and I did, but I may have grabbed a few things on the way out. I wanted to learn, and these classes. John, you know some of the tech my father was working with was ancient. It's practically ridiculous now, but he was making it up as he went along. He thought of stuff that's still unique, that no one else has thought of yet. I wanted all of it. I wanted to understand it. So I went back to get what I could.
You stripped the house for parts. I get it.
John laughed as he picked up Theodore's severed paw and considered it for a moment.
Even your favorite toy? Don't you think that's a little heartless?
Is it?
Charlie picked up a piece from the box, a metal joint, and weighed it in her hands.
I took Theodore apart because I wanted to understand him, John. Isn't that the most loving thing there is?
Maybe I should reconsider this whole dating thing, John said, wide-eyed.
He was important to me because my father made him for me, not because he was stitched up to look like a rabbit.
She discarded the joint, setting it next to her on the bed. She turned her attention to the box, picking up pieces one by one and setting them in a row. She was sure she'd recognize what she needed when she saw it. Charlie looked at circuitry and wires, metal joints and plastic casings, examining each piece carefully. Something would cry out to her, just like the animatronic beast had done, with that raw sense of wrongness. But after a while, her neck grew sore from bending over the box. Her eyes were beginning to glaze over. She discarded the piece of metal tubing in her hand, tossing it onto the growing pile on her bed. At the clanking sound, John looked up.
"Where do you even sleep?" he asked, gesturing not only to the growing pile of electronic and mechanical parts, but to the clothing and books, and the smaller piles of electronic and mechanical parts.
Charlie shrugged.
"There's always room for me," she said mildly. Even if just barely.
Yeah, but what about when you're married?
John's face flushed before he'd even finished the sentence. Charlie looked up at him, one eyebrow hinged slightly higher than the other.
Someday, John said hastily. To someone else.
His face grew grimmer. Charlie felt her eyebrow lift higher of its own volition.
So, what are we looking for again?
John furrowed his brow and scooted his chair closer to the bed, peering into the box.
This.
Spotting a glimmer in the pile, Charlie took hold of a small disc and carefully placed it in the palm of her hand. She held it out so John could see. It looked just like the metallic disc they'd found in the body of the animatronic, but one side of it had been damaged, revealing a curious metal framework inside. Several wires extended, connecting to a black keypad not much larger than the disc itself. Funny, Charlie chuckled to herself. What? The last time I held this, I was more interested in the keypad. She smiled. This part is a common diagnostic tool. Someone must have been testing it.
Or trying to find out what it was, John added. That thing doesn't look like anything else in the box. Just like that monster we found doesn't look like anything your dad made. I mean, it kind of looked like Foxy, but not the one your dad made. This was some sort of twisted version of Foxy.
She pulled a heavy metal joint from the box. This doesn't belong here either.
What's wrong with it?
It's meant to be an elbow, but look. She bent the joint all the way over, then all the way back the other way, then looked at John expectantly. He looked blank.
So?
My father wouldn't have used this. He always put stops so that the joints couldn't do things humans can't do.
Maybe it's not finished?
It's finished. It's not just that, though. It's the way the metal is cut, the way it's put together. It's like, you write things, right? So you read other people's work? He nodded. If I ripped up some books and gave you a big pile of pages and asked you to pick out the ones by your favorite author, could you do that, just based on the style?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I might be wrong about a few, but yeah.
Well, it's the same thing here. She held the heavy piece up again to make her point. My dad didn't write this.
Okay, but what does it mean?
John asked. He unplugged the broken disc from the diagnostic keypad and took the second disc from the monster out of his pocket. He fiddled with it briefly, then managed to unhinge one side of it. Frowning with concentration, he attached the wires from the keypad to the new disc. When he was finished, he hesitated.
I don't want to flip any of the switches, he said. I don't think my stomach can take it.
Yeah, don't touch anything yet. After what happened at the house, we shouldn't assume that we know what any of this does. Charlie set the box on the floor and started shuffling through the parts again, looking at the patterns, trying to see something in them. There has to be something else in here that I'm missing.
Charlie, John said. Sorry to interrupt your conversation with yourself, but look.
He passed her the broken disc he'd just unhooked.
Look on the back.
The back had once been smooth, but it was scratched a lot since it was first made. Charlie stared at it for a minute, then finally saw it. There was writing along one edge. She had to bring the piece of plastic close to her face to make the letters out. They were tiny and written in an old-fashioned, flowing script. They read, Afton Robotics, LLC. Charlie dropped the disc immediately. Afton? William Afton? That's my father's old partner.
That's Dave's real name, John finished.
Charlie sat silently for a moment, feeling as if something very large and unwieldy had been shoved into her head. I thought he was just a business partner for Freddy's, she said slowly.
I guess he did a bit more than that.
He's dead, though. It's not like we can ask him questions. We have to figure out what's happening now. She grabbed the cardboard box and swept the extraneous pieces, the pieces that had been her father's, into it, then shoved it back under the bed. John ducked out of her way as she maneuvered around the small space.
And how do you think we should do that? He asked. What is happening now? There have been two bodies so far, both killed by something like what we just found.
Three bodies, Charlie said, flushing slightly. John covered his face with his hands for a moment and took a deep breath.
Okay, three. Are you sure it's not four?
I didn't see the third one. Clay just told me about it after she was found. It had been out for a few days. She was the first one, I think.
So why them? Are these robots just going on a killing spree? Why would they do that?
Charlie, is there anything else about this that you're not telling me?
Charlie bit her lip, hesitant.
I'm serious. I'm in this with you, but if I don't know what's happening, I can't help you.
Charlie nodded. I don't know if it means anything. Clay said it was just a coincidence, but the woman I found in the field, John, she looked like me. His expression went dark.
What do you mean, looked like you?
Not exactly like me. Brown hair, same size, sort of. I don't know. If you describe me to someone and ask them to pick me out of a crowd, they might come back with her. There was just this awful moment when I looked down at her, and it was like looking at me.
Clay said it didn't mean anything?
He said it's a college town. There are a lot of brown-haired girls around. One of the other two victims was a man, so...
Probably a coincidence, then, John offered.
Yeah, Charlie said. I guess it was just unsettling.
There must be something else that's linking them together. Another person, a job, a location, maybe.
John looked toward the window. Charlie caught him smiling, and John's expression sobered, looking suddenly self-conscious.
You're enjoying this, she said.
No.
He shrugged. I wouldn't put it that way. I don't want any more bodies. But it's a mystery, and it's an excuse to spend some time with you.
He smiled, but quickly made his face serious again.
So what about the bodies? Where were they found?
Well, Charlie brushed the hair off her face, slightly distracted. They were all found in fields, miles apart. The first one, the one they just found, was over on the far side of Hurricane, and the girl I found today was left by the side of the road between Hurricane and here.
Where on the road? How far from here?
About halfway. Suddenly, her eyes widened. Forget the fields. Or don't forget them, but they're not the point, or at least not the whole point. The holes were behind the woman's house. They take them from their homes. That's where they're starting. It's where we should start too. She headed for the door, and John followed.
Wait, what? Where are we going?
My car. I want to look at a map. When they got to the car, Charlie pulled a stack of papers out of the glove compartment and rifled through them, then pulled out a map and handed it to John. Give me a pen. She held out her hand, and John pulled two from his front pocket, handing her one. Charlie spread the map out on the hood of the car, and they bent over it. The woman's house was here, she said, circling the spot. Clay gave me the addresses of the others. She pulled the now slightly grubby menu from her pocket and handed it to John. You look for that one, she said quietly. Even though they both knew the area, tracing the streets for the victims' houses took longer than Charlie had expected.
Found it, John announced.
1158 Oak Street is right there. She circled the point and stepped back.
What's that? John said,
pointing to something scribbled in the margin. Charlie picked up the corner of the map, and her heart skipped. It was another drawing of a rectangle. She didn't remember making it. It's a door. But what door? She stared down at it. It had no knobs or latches, nothing to indicate how she would get inside, or where it was. What good is it to know what I'm looking for, if I don't know why or how to find it? Just a doodle, she said sternly, to redirect his attention. Come on, concentrate.
Yeah, John said.
At least the pattern was instantly clear. The houses made a crooked line from Hurricane toward St. George, truncated halfway between.
They're all about the same distance apart, Charlie said, a swell of dread rising in her chest.
John was nodding as if he understood.
What does it mean? She asked urgently.
They're moving in a specific direction and traveling roughly the same distance between. He paused. Killing.
Who's killing who?
A voice rang out behind them. Charlie gasped and whirled around, her heart pounding. Jessica was behind her, holding a stack of books to her chest. Her eyes were wide and a grin of excitement broke across her face.
We were just talking about the movie we saw last night, John said with a casual smile.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Jessica gave him a quick look of faux seriousness and glanced at Charlie.
So, Charlie, what's the map for?
She asked, gesturing at it elaborately.
Oh, does it have to do with Freddy's?
She said with excitement in her voice. John looked at Charlie suspiciously.
Did she tell you?
Jessica looked to John, and John looked back at Charlie, eager to hear the rest.
Jessica, now probably isn't the best time, Charlie said feebly. We went to Freddy's yesterday,
Jessica said in a hushed tone, although no one else was around.
Oh, really? Funny, Charlie didn't mention that. Was that before or after all that shopping?
John folded his arms.
I was going to tell you, Charlie murmured.
Charlie, sometimes I think you're just trying to get yourself killed.
John put his hand over his face.
So what's the map for? Jessica repeated. What are we looking for?
Monsters, Charlie said. New animatronics. They're murdering people, seemingly at random, she continued, not fully convinced of what she'd just said. Jessica's face grew grave, but her eyes still held a twinkle of eagerness as she walked around the side of the car to dump her books on the back seat.
How? Where did they come from? Freddy's?
No, not Freddy's. They came from my dad's house, we think. But they weren't his, Jessica. He didn't build them. We think it was Dave, Afton, whatever his name is. The words had come tumbling out all at once, nonsensical, and John stepped in to translate.
She means that.
No, I get it, Jessica cut in. You don't have to talk to me like I'm uninitiated. I was at Freddy's last year too, remember? I've seen some crazy things. So what are we going to do?
She looked at Charlie, her game face on. She looked far more together than Charlie felt.
We don't know what any of it means for sure, John said. We're still figuring it out.
Why didn't you tell me?
Jessica asked. Charlie looked up at her hesitantly.
I just didn't want it to be like last time, she said. There's no need to put everyone at risk.
Yeah, just me. John smirked.
I get that, Jessica said. But after what happened last time, I mean, we're in this together.
John leaned back against the car, glancing around for anyone who might be listening.
So,
Jessica stepped around her to look at the map.
What are we doing?
Charlie leaned in and squinted at the distance key on the map.
There's about 3 miles between each location.
She studied the map again for a moment, then drew another circle.
That's my house, my dad's house.
She looked up at John.
Whatever is out there killing people came from there. They must have...
Her voice trailed off.
When the storm broke the wall, John muttered.
What?
Jessica asked. A section of the house was sealed until the storm broke through. With firm strokes, Charlie drew a straight line from her father's house through the 3 houses of the victims and continued the line across the map.
That can't be right, Jessica said when she saw where the line finally ended.
John peered over Charlie's shoulder.
Isn't that your college?
He asked.
Yeah, it's our dorm.
The excitement had left Jessica's voice.
That doesn't make any sense.
Charlie couldn't take her eyes off the paper. It felt a little like she had drawn the path to her own death.
It wasn't a coincidence, she said.
What are you talking about? Don't you get it?
She let out a faint laugh, unable to stop herself.
It's me. They're coming for me. They're looking for me. What? Who are they?
Jessica looked to John.
There were three empty graves at her dad's house, so there must be three of them out there somewhere.
They move at night, Charlie said. I mean, they can't walk around in the daylight, so they find a place to bury themselves until nightfall.
Even if you're right, and they're coming for you, John said, bending down and trying to catch her eye. Now we know they're coming, and going by this, we can at least guess where they might go next.
So, what are you saying? What does that matter?
Charlie heard her own voice break.
It matters because those things are out there, right now, buried in someone's yard. And when the sun goes down, they're going to kill again, in the most horrible way possible.
Charlie said nothing, her head bowed.
Look.
John straightened out the map and pushed it into Charlie's lap, so she couldn't help but see it.
Somewhere in here.
He pointed to the next circled area on the line.
We can stop them if we can find them first, John said with urgency.
Okay.
Charlie took a breath.
We don't have much time, though.
John grabbed the map, and they all got into the car.
Just tell me where to go, Charlie said grimly.
John peered down at the map.
So this is where we need to be? He confirmed, pointing to the fifth circle,
and Charlie nodded. He turned the map and squinted.
Turn left out of the parking lot, then take the next right. I know this place. I've driven past it. It's an apartment complex. It's pretty run down from what I remember.
Jessica leaned forward, poking her head between the front seats.
Those circles don't look too precise. It could be anywhere in the area.
Yeah, but I'm guessing it's going to be the place with the three fresh graves in the backyard, John said.
Charlie glanced at each of them for a second before fixing her eyes back on the road. There was safety in numbers. Last year, when they were trapped at Freddy's together, Jessica was the one who had gotten them inside the restaurant in the first place. She was brave, even when she didn't want to be, and that meant more than whatever notion of romance John was entertaining.
Charlie, turn right,
John exclaimed. She yanked the wheel, barely making the turn. Focus. Imminent murder first, everything else later. Before them lay sprawling fields, lots marked out and prepared for construction and future development, but never finished. Some had never even begun. Slabs of concrete were stacked here and there, almost completely obscured by overgrowth. A few lots away, steel beams had been erected to make a foundation that was never filled in. The place had decayed before it was completed. In the farthest lot back was a cluster of what seemed to be finished apartment complexes. Grass and weeds grew rampant around them, however, climbing up their very walls. It looked like years of growth. It was hard to tell whether anyone lived inside. Years ago, the city had been diligently preparing for a population boom, one that never arrived.
Are there even people out here?
Jessica was gazing out the window.
There must be. There are parked cars.
John craned his neck.
I think those are cars. I don't know where we're supposed to look, though.
I think we just have to drive around.
Charlie slowed the car as they traversed the road leading toward the buildings.
Maybe not, John said. I bet it's somewhere near the edge of the development.
Most people would probably call the police if they saw 8-foot monsters digging holes in someone's backyard. There is a lot of visibility out here.
Of course, Charlie said.